When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
ESNY. Did you even watch the monstrosity of Game Six?
I like had it a little bit on in the background, and I was actually watching more of UFC than Game Six. But I mean,
I didn't even know there was a UFC fight last night.
It was actually a good one. It was Shevchenko versus Santos for like the women's. Oh, I can't remember. I don't know if it was flyweight or something. Nice. Shevchenko was a beast, and then Oliver Teixeira versus some Eastern European dude who is a beast. Yeah. So.
Unlike the Rangers, much of the series.
It's just, you build up so much goodwill and it is shattered. Absolutely shattered. Like, I don't understand what Gerard Gallant was freaking doing. Like, why did we...
Breaking up the kid line was a choice.
It's not even just a, like, and it was the wrong freaking choice. Like, and look, why do you, if you're having a hard time, if the Rangers are having a hard time scoring goals, why do you take out a player who is offensively built to score goals or to at least help generate scoring chances for a guy like Dryden Hunt, who does not do that
at all? Got a good hockey name, though.
Great hockey name. He's got a great head of hair. Great lettuce. Okay. But Kaapo Kakko is your second overall pick. He is part of the future core of the team, and you scratch him. Oh, and then you got Ryan Strome, who's barely alive. It's literally a game time decision, and then doesn't even finish the game because he's hurt. And Larry Brooks came out with an article in the Post today. It was just like, this is exactly what happened with Montreal 2 years ago after, or not 2 years ago, last year after their Stanley Cup fiasco, where they scratched Kasperi Kotkaniemi in games 4 and 5, and then he got a offer sheet from Carolina at a price that Montreal couldn't match, and Montreal had to let him go. And if you don't think that could happen to Kaapo Kakko, open your damn eyes, because the Rangers are just shitting away their young talent for God knows why. God knows why.
And with that, folks, this is the Bleacher Creatures Yankees podcast, episode 132, brought to you as always by Elite Sports New York, Crossing Broad, XL Media, and Warwick Gaming, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. As you can tell, Alec has a lot of emotions about his beloved New York Rangers, and I gotta say, man, with the beard, you kind of had a bit of a Don LaGreca thing going on there for a little bit.
Should I start shaking my mic?
I mean, like, only if you're getting that naturally mad. But
that, anyway, I mean, apologies that loss hurt.
Folks, I want to apologize in advance. My that non-COVID illness I had when we had a Danny on last show, that has morphed into a full-blown cold ear and sinus infection. So thank God for some antibiotics. I got this hot water and lemon thing going for me again. But yeah, if that's why I don't sound like my usual self, sorry about that. Anyway, let's talk about Matt Carpenter, man. How about that mustachioed monstrosity, like the good type of monstrosity of a man?
He is a freaking beaut. That's your, let me just say.
That's your boy right there, too.
That is my boy. So I pulled up the receipts.
Okay.
Yeah. February 23rd was when I said the Yankees should take a flyer on him. And I said something along the lines, I don't have them up anymore, but I was looking at it when I was at the Phillies game today. that Carpenter believed that his struggles were purely based from a mechanical standpoint and not due to age. And that if, and from everything that I was wrong in my previous in that one episode where I thought, you know, Saris wrote the article, it was Ken Rosenthal. When Rosenthal wrote the article, everything made sense that Carpenter believed he wasn't in his legs enough and it was causing him to spin off the ball, which, you know, just means that you're not hitting through it and you're not getting as much power into the ball and out of your swing as you could.
I think he used the term to describe his decline. I think he said like he just kind of he'd fallen off a cliff.
Yeah, yeah. And so reading all that, it's nice to see it. It's awesome to see a hitter have a general understanding of how it went wrong, and then it's just like, okay, now I got to find a way to, you know, get it back. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm Nostradamus and would have expected this kind of, you know, tear that he's on, but the dude had 3 extra base hits today, 7 RBIs, and I think he barreled every single ball that he hit. That is,
I didn't get a good look at the double, but I think you're absolutely right on that.
Well, like according to Baseball Savant, yeah, he hit it 95 miles per hour, so it's a barrel. It's good in my books.
Just the work ethic that he brings to this team. I mean, he signed for basically nothing, then says his first interview, "I'll do whatever they want me to do here, even haul luggage onto the plane." And then Max Goodman, who big friend of the show we had on a couple of weeks ago, tweeted this out. This is Matt Carpenter on the 2022 Yankees. "I mean, I've said it numerous times and I'll keep saying it because I don't think it's a secret and I don't think that it should be forgot. This is a really special group of people in this room. It's more than just talent. I watch it every day, the way they compete. Offensively, it's 9-on-1 every single night. That's a rare thing. A lot of clubhouses, a lot of teams, everybody's out there taking their at-bats, trying to put up their numbers, and that's just not the case here. And you can say the same thing from the pitching side. I mean, I see Cole, Nestor, our entire staff living and dying with every pitch that's being thrown out there. It's just a lot of fun to come to work when you have that many guys all rooting for each other, all pulling for each other, and you add to that talent, and you add to that the talent that we have in this clubhouse, and what you see is a recipe for success. It's playing out every day." I'm going to say it. Matt Carpenter is the Brett Gardner of this team. He hasn't been here very long, hasn't built up nearly that much equity, but that's the kind of leadership sense that I'm getting from this guy.
Yeah, I mean, and we also forget, like, this is a very experienced veteran. Like, he has 50 postseason games under his belt. He was part of the Cardinals World Series team that lost to Boston, which, by the way, in that World Series, he hit a shade under 300. Like, this dude kind of knows what it takes to at least get to the finish line, even if he might not have crossed it yet.
Those Cardinals teams from, we'll say, David Freese was 2010. So, all right, so we'll say the Cardinals from, like, 2006 up until, we'll say, around 2015-16. Those were some really good teams.
Yeah,
It was like almost an exact model of how to build depth from the top down. I made a quip in an article I wrote about them for Forbes many moons ago that this is like baseball's version of the San Antonio Spurs. Mm-hmm. One guy goes down, great. Up from the minors, it's like he never left.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually looking at that. I'm looking at the 2013 Cardinals team. And yeah, I'm like, you had Matt Carpenter in the heart of that lineup.
Yeah.
But then you had guys like Alan Craig, you know, Matt Holliday, John Jay, Matt Adams, like guys who just kind of, as you said, like they just stepped up when they needed to. Not crazy flashy in terms of the roster. I mean, like, but hey, they put it together and went on a pretty awesome run. So, I mean,
look, it may be a wide gap, but there's a reason the St. Louis Cardinals are behind the Yankees in World Series One. They've always been a model of excellence. They've had some rough times, but on the whole, that has been a legacy of building good, deep winning teams. Mm-hmm. And Matt Carpenter bringing not just that experience, but that work ethic to this mixed bag of youth and experienced players here in the Bronx, that's only going to be a good thing.
No, absolutely. And going back to that quote that Max Goodman tweeted, like, I love hearing that these guys are battling for one another. And, you know, it's such kind of like a sports cliche to hear, Mm-hmm. But I do, like, I don't know. You can sit there and you can look back at certain Yankees teams in the past, probably, like, you know, let's say towards the end of, like, the Jeter era.
Yeah.
And onward, where it's like, yeah, some guys are just there to, you know, kind of looking after themselves. Like, it that idea, the idea of buying into the team and playing for each other, as Carpenter described it, sounds very much like the dynasty teams.
Yeah. Like, I was 12 for the 98 team, and I just remember, even with the slow start to that season and some really ugly losses on the back end, even in the playoffs too, there was just something about this team where it's like, no, like, that they're going to see this through. Mm-hmm. This is going to happen. Now, ever since then, I've gotten a lot more pessimistic, and I expect nothing from the Yankees at any point. But no, like, this has been a really fun season. I'm, like, still not convinced that it's real, but just seeing everything play out, just even all these hard-fought wins, where, like, Friday night, for example, against the Cubs, 1-1 game all throughout, pitcher's duel. The Yankees were, and Cubs combined, 1-for-37 runners in scoring position. Real ugly. But last year, that kind of game happens. You're like, okay, like, the loss is happening at some point. We don't know how, but it's coming. Against the Cubs, the whole night, I just kept thinking, no, it's going to happen. It's going to take a while, but it's going to happen.
No, yeah. Like, I you remember how, like, last year, I feel like we would talk about, you know, oh, that this is a scheduled loss for the Yankees, and Boone would kind of manage it that way.
Oh, where, yeah. Yeah, he'd kind of, like, punt on the game early.
Yeah. And there have been a few times where I think I've watched a game where it's like, oh, I wonder if this is kind of one of those games. Not to the sense that Aaron Boone punts on it early, right, but just like, oh, you know, nothing's really going for the Yankees right now. You know, they're allowed to struggle here and there. Like, I'm not going to get upset about that. But then they pull out a game like that where, you know, they walk off the Cubs, or the game against Minnesota where, I mean, they come, like, roaring back 7-2 to then be 10-7. Like, that's, well,
all right. I guess let's shift to the Minnesota series. Like, I'll take 2 out of 3 wins. And okay, Nestor, we all knew Nestor was due a clunker at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, as great as he was, go back to any Cy Young Award winner season, they're going to have one or two starts there that are like, oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, that was really bad. But I don't know what it is about this Yankees-Twins rivalry, but ever since the Aaron Hicks game, there's always weird games between these teams.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know what it is either.
Yeah, I'm going to give a shout-out to my buddy Tim, who sadly is moving back to Minnesota in a few days. It makes me very sad. But I was actually out kind of half-watching the game with him and a couple of other of our dad friends, and he shows up in a Twins hat and a Jose Barrios t-shirt jersey. So, yeah, okay, so Tim was the Twins' good luck charm. The Yankees lost. Congratulations. There we go. We said it.
I think we got to start calling it the Ryan Rucco effect, too.
Yeah. I mean, I love him in the booth. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no, but absolutely. He makes things interesting.
I also wonder if, like, because the main thing in the Twins series was the pitching, which across the board was an ugly performance. The starters combined for a 13.23 ERA, if you can believe that. Now, maybe it's a weather effect just because Minnesota does get very humid in the summertime and climate change is a thing. But even with allegedly unjuiced balls, you got to wonder, like, did Major League Baseball bring back the juice balls just to boost the series a bit? Or, I don't know, the Yankees pitching was uncharacteristically bad, but in the grand scheme of things, this is probably just a blip on the radar, I'm sure.
Yeah, I that's how I'm taking it. I'm not looking too much into, you know, how hard, you know, Yankees pitching got hit. It's like, oh yeah, they're gonna get into these stretches, and the Yankees offense, like, bailed them out just as many times as Yankees pitching has bailed out Yankees offense. So yeah. Like, I'm not too concerned. But it is interesting if it is more of a Minnesota at this time of year thing. Did you see that home run Byron Buxton hit after the Yankees series? It was like,
no, I think I missed that one.
He went down and got, I think it was a slider or some breaking ball at the knees, and he half swung and hit it to left center for a home run.
Byron Buxton is so good.
Yeah,
he's so frustrated. He's a damn string bean who just hits bombs. And oh my, like every time I watch him, I like, I hate when he beats on the Yankees, but I can't be mad at him because he's just that good.
Yeah. Wasn't there that talk where it's like when he's healthy, he's as good as Mike Trout, which I mean, it's not completely far-fetched.
I mean, I remember when he got drafted, they were giving him the same sort of five-tool hype that Trout had.
Yeah, well, yeah, like he, you could definitely see it for sure. But there was like that one season, I don't know if it was last season or the season before, where he, I don't even know if he played 100 games and he still posted like a 4.5 war.
Yeah.
And it's like, excuse me, what?
Yeah, he was also drafted back when Georgia was a baseball factory, like a mega baseball factory. So he's Stone Mountain strong, I'll say that much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going back to the pitching, though, I will say this much. I am moderately concerned about Tyone just because his last two starts, he gave up 7 hits today in 5 innings. And then in against the Twins, I think he gave up 9 in less than 4 innings. And you can see just by watching it, in 4 innings. Yeah, 9 hits in 4 innings, 7 hits in 5 innings against the Cubs. And like you were at the game, at the Phillies game, so you didn't see it today, but you saw it in Minnesota for sure. He's definitely leaving his fastball up in the zone a little bit more, definitely hanging more of his breaking pitches. The good news is that he wasn't getting too burned by hard contact.
Mm-hmm.
At least not against Chicago, but against the Twins, he was getting rocked. But
yeah, I mean, you know, Tyone isn't really a throw it by them kind of pitcher.
Yeah, so, he's very whiff reliant.
Yeah, so I think my biggest concern would come from how many batters he's walking. So.
All right.
Like, you know, today he only had 1 walk. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah, 7 hits, 1 walk, 3 runs, 5 Ks. Was it his best outing? No. Was it good enough? Absolutely. And I'm actually surprised to see that he has a 7-1 record. That's actually wild. 20 win Jameson Tyone this year, maybe? Huh? Question mark?
We'll see. I mean, like, he's definitely pitching like he wants $20 million a year.
Yeah. But, like, you know, so again, kind of. Talking about the pitching in general, but like even zeroing on a guy like Tyone, it's a blip.
I certainly hope so, just because he's pitched so well this year, especially since he's kind of figured out his shit.
Yeah, and he's easy to root for.
Yeah, yeah. So. Plus, I think he wants to stay here because like he trained in New York all off season.
Yeah,
and lived here too instead of going back to Texas. But I don't know. You got to figure out who matters more in the future, him or Clark Schmidt.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's
a question for another time, though.
Yeah. Also, how about Manny Benuelos getting the save? Let's go.
What a great story for Manny Benuelos. It wasn't that long ago. They're all saying, the killer bees, Manny Benuelos, Dellin Betances, and Andrew Brackman. And, okay, Dellin Betances, great, 5 good years.
Yeah.
But can't ever handle the ninth inning.
Mm-hmm.
Brackman, I don't think he ever pitched in the majors.
Yeah.
And Benuelos, yeah, he ran into some shoulder trouble and bounced around for a bit, but now it seems he's found this home as almost like a more durable Wandy Peralta, just this crafty lefty who comes out and junk balls all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny how it all works out, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great story. He definitely had the benefit of some run support today. I don't know if I would have trusted him like that in a 9-4 game.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping that they would let Rizzo pitch.
I think Rizzo was hoping too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why Booney has been hesitant to put him in. Like, yeah, throw him in. Let him do it. How many more games this year are they going to score 18 runs?
Yeah, that's fair. Let's talk about the next slate of games, actually. So the next 2 weeks, high blood pressure city for sure. Now, granted, even with a good division lead, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the Rays come to visit. Then for the weekend, the Yankees go to Toronto, then three more games in Tampa, and then four games in the Bronx against the Astros. I would call that, let's say, the meat grinder of the schedule, Alec. What would you say?
Yeah, I like meat grinder, but I would also say, if I don't know, how many games is that in total?
That's 13 games.
13 games?
Yeah.
Say they go 9-4 in those games. Does that kind of put the nail in the coffin?
I don't know if it puts the nail in the coffin, just because any team is capable of pulling off a miraculous A's or Cleveland 20-game streak at some point.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that most importantly, you got to take at least 2 out of 3 from the Rays at home.
Yes.
And the Jays, just looking at the pitching matchups. All right, you're going to face Alek Manoah on Saturday, and he's amazing. But you got to go in with the attitude of, okay, like let's he's having a Cy Young season. Let's give him a bad start.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like that's a game and a matchup, and you just got to battle.
Yeah. And the Trop is the Trop. That we've talked about that plenty of times. The Astros, though, maybe it's just the Angels' cold streak, but they kind of really wrested control of the AL West. And cheating aside, they're still a really good team.
Yeah, I actually have not really been paying much attention to them, other than Yordan Alvarez being a beast, and I got Justin Verlander on my fantasy team. So
they're third in pitching with a staff ERA of 3.08. And hitting-wise, okay, in terms of batting average, they're – where are they? Should have pulled this up earlier. Okay, they're only hitting .236 as a team.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, but in runs scored – oh, and they're 23rd in runs scored.
So they're doing it based off of pitching.
Yeah. And we know the Astros are good at developing pitchers. They pretty much saved Justin Verlander's career.
Yeah, like.
But then again, the Yankees own Justin Verlander.
Do they?
Yeah, they've made him look bad more than a few times.
Yeah, I feel like it's been so long since they've faced him. I can't remember.
Well, yeah, because he's just coming back from Tommy John.
Yeah.
Here are the pitching matchups though for the Rays series at home. All right, so Tuesday that's the TBS game. Nice, Tuesday Night Baseball. All right, so you got Garrett Cole versus Corey Kluber, which, all right, you're hoping that Cole bounces back from that really bad start in Minnesota where he had zero fastball command.
Yeah.
And Kluber, okay, he's Corey Kluber, and he's still pretty good. He showed last year he still got some left in the tank. But last time we faced him in Tampa, maybe he just caught us on a bad night, but it seemed he was almost overachieving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I'm that series against Tampa, I felt like there was a combination of, yeah, caught the Yankees at the wrong time, a little bit of bad ball luck, like some bad Babbitt.
Because he and Cole were duking it out up until that one egregious call.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. Don't remind me of that, please. it's going to come down to, does Cole have command of his fastball? And you know, in Minnesota, he didn't really have command of anything.
Because Kluber, looking at his Statcast page right now, he's doing well in terms of average exit velocity and hard hit rates. He's still relying a lot on guys chasing. He's not walking anybody. So, I don't know, maybe just look at the tape and see what Dylan Lawson can do with it.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, kind of go in there with try to attack a certain part of his arsenal or his approach.
The goal should be, if you throw something up in the zone, take a swing.
Yeah, yeah. Like try to read that slurve, slider, whatever it is, early.
It's a pitch, as he would say.
Yeah, it's certainly something. Try to spin on that and, you know, make it a non-factor, and then work from there.
Wednesday is going to be fun. Nestor Cortez versus Shane McClanahan.
Ooh.
So you got to figure Nestor is going to have a better night at home.
Yeah.
Because the Rays, we've seen with the Rays, they're still like they're playing Rays ball. They're really good, but they're not like the monster they were last year.
No, yeah, like they have.
I say this at the risk of jinxing the series and they sweep us, God forbid. but But anyway, so yeah, but Shane McClanahan, we just know he's really good.
Yeah, he dude throws BBs. He just, you know, he strikes out everyone, and
he's got a really clean windup too.
Yeah, yeah, clean. I love guys with clean mechanics, or yeah, just make it kind of look easy, and the ball jumps out of hand. I know, like from experience, facing guys like that was always the hardest.
Yeah, because like with guys who have those really clean, smooth deliveries, like Shane McClanahan, like a Mariano Rivera, like an Andy Pettit, it's like I like to think of it as almost like a wind up toy, where they just kind of like wind it up and then just let it do its thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah.
Sam Lincecum also had that, but with not a clean windup.
Yeah, man, his body couldn't hold up to it.
Yeah, and the last one. I mean, the series finale. If you ask me, that's the Yankees game to lose. Severino versus Drew Rasmussen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I love this year Severino. He's so fun to watch.
It's almost like he never left.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, some guys, I know John Smoltz gets a lot of criticism for the things he says, or things he says. It's been a long day.
Long day. I'm sick. Hey, like we will not be posting any audio clips to social media of this.
But I remember a few years back how he said that when he came back from Tommy John surgery, he felt like it made him a better pitcher. It made, like, not just physically, how it helped him like be a little bit stronger in other parts of like his arm and how it helped him throw a little harder, but just like he kind of was able to take a step back and really understand what it takes to not just throw but to pitch. Yeah. And I think we're seeing that with Severino. Well,
incorporating the cutters really helped too.
Well, I was just about to say, like, never in my wildest dreams would I have thought that Severino would have three very good pitches, and now he's a four-pitch pitcher. Like, we knew about the fastball and the slider. The changeup was hit or miss, like, before, but now it seems like it's more hit than miss this year, and the cutter has just kind of been a nice, like, oh, you're suddenly throwing that now?
He's pitching like he wants that option picked up.
Yeah, and from the Yankees, he'd do it.
Yeah, and he's been very vocal. He's like, I want to be a Yankee for 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. You can see he loves playing here.
Yeah. He's certainly been in the system long enough. And I'm pretty sure we also have his brother somewhere in the minors, Rafael.
He was an
international free agent at one point. I don't know if we still have him, but like,
yeah, I remember signed. When they signed him. Yeah, I remember when they signed him, but I don't know if he's still with the team.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking it up right now. But in the meantime, Severino has been awesome. I'm thrilled. I mean, he's heavy throwing Sebi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope, Rafael Severino was released from his contract.
No, that's a shame.
Yeah. Oh, well.
You can watch Big Bro play.
Yeah. But the Blue Jays, though, they're streaky, but you always wonder, like, playing them in Toronto, it's always a little jarring, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, Toronto kind of has, like, the trop effect, just it being a dome and the turf, but then there's – I think Toronto fans are better than Tampa fans.
They
you know,
are,
that's but... not because I'm bitter that the Lightning beat the Rangers, everyone. Chill.
No, I will say this though, like, because I've met some Blue Jays fans at Yankee Stadium, and they'll say like, yeah, it's fun to go see the Blue Jays play, but Rogers Center is a dump.
Is it? I've never been, so I've always wanted to go. But
apparently, it's. Did you ever get to the old Yankee Stadium?
Yeah.
You know how it was like that really dank and dark concrete concourse before the seats.
Yeah,
that's what the Rogers Center is like, apparently.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's a shame because once you're actually at field level and they open up the dome and you got the needle looking over you, like,
yeah,
it seems like a beautiful
pitching matchups in Toronto. Jordan Montgomery against Ross Stripling, Tyone versus Alec Manoah, and Garrett Cole versus Yusei Kikuchi. It's going to depend on how much run support Montgomery gets, but that should be 2 out of 3 on paper.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I would 2 out of 3 for sure.
I'd argue of if you're going to lose any of the next three series, that's the one you want to lose. Just kind of give Toronto their moment in the sun and then just go into the trap angry.
Yeah, I mean, look, if they come out of this stretch with an under 500 record, it's not the end of the world.
No.
If it's a 500 record, cool. You know, no sweat off my back.
Yeah.
And then, like, just, I personally believe if they come out with, like, a 9-4 record, I think it at least will probably guarantee them just playoffs. Because, like, yeah. unless things drastically and just, like, catastrophically go wrong from here on out, the Yankees have set themselves up nicely.
They really have. Because, like, 44 wins, and it's June 12th.
Yeah. And my favorite stat, I saw something about, like, the Blue Jays went, 15-5 in their last 20 games, and they gained zero ground.
Because that's what happens when you don't suffer too many dumb losses.
Yeah, just taking care of business. So
yeah,
and I think that's the kind of mindset the Yankees need to have going into it. It's just like, yeah, we got some tough opponents up like coming up, but we just got to take care of business.
I mean, Cameron Maybin, who I love as a Yes analyst so far, by the way.
Mm.
He's really talked about just hitting velocity just as a team. He goes, no, it's just about, yeah, you're not scoring a lot of runs, but hey, just worry about finding your base hits.
Yeah.
Just like clog the bases because you get a runner on base, that's more likely to lead to the pitcher making a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw it. Yeah. In the Twin Series, just drawing so many walks, getting all those base hits, clogging the bases. And sure enough, the Twins pitching implodes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, if you fight to get that to that next pitch, I mean, That's all you got to keep focusing on. I tell kids that I train and teach that all the time. It's like, I don't care if you swing at a ball and it's the ugliest swing you've ever taken in your life. If you foul it off, you survive one more pitch, and that could be the pitch that you need.
Yeah.
And you can really see that taking hold with this Yankee lineup. It's just, you know, they're not necessarily boom or bust. We're still boom, but we're going to kind of, you know, make sure the pitcher gives us that boom opportunity. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, just to break it down with an even more simpler numbers, just watching, not just as a fan or as a journalist, but just from a pure baseball standpoint, I'm thinking that win or lose, if a team can have like an inning at bat and they make the pitcher throw 20 pitches, regardless of result, that's an accomplishment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just, it gets you one step closer to their bullpen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like,
even if it's that's their sole bad inning, like, you kind of like had them on the ropes for a second. That's something to celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not like crazy celebrate, but that's like, it's a small victory.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, sometimes you have to break down the game like that. It's all these little battles that you have to win. And then all of a sudden the floodgates will open, and it's like, you don't get to that point unless you win all those small battles leading up to it. So
kind of offshooting of this, did you see John Boy's video where in the Tigers game they determined that Rodriguez was tipping his pitches?
Yes, I did.
Something tells me that this team has done some weird mind games where they've become better at picking that stuff up.
Yeah, it. I mean,
just against the Cubs on Saturday.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, they seem to be on pitcher stuff, like. It's ridiculous. Like what they did to Shohei.
Yeah.
I think Otani's slider is like one of the best swing and miss pitches in the league. And I don't think the Yankees swung and missed at it once.
So, yeah.
I mean, they're picking up on those tendencies. And I was talking to my buddy who's a pitcher, and he was saying pitchers, like, it's those little things that they never think about. And, you know, and I even think the pitcher from the Tigers said that. I think he tweeted it or something, or he talked to John Boy. He's like, yeah, like, I never would have thought that would be the thing that gives away my pitch.
Now, in fairness to young Mr. Swarmer, Matt Swarmer, who pitched for the Cubs on Saturday, okay, he's 28 years old, and he throws a 90-mile-per-hour fastball with a lot of spin. Maybe he wasn't tipping his pitches. Maybe the Yankees just said, okay, this is what he throws. We just need to retime the swing. A bunch of solo home runs later, look what happens. And it's also only his third ever major league start.
Yeah. There are ways for hitters who can, like, you know, you go up there and, you know, maybe they're just seeing a certain pitch really well. And it's such a liberating feeling to be like, okay, I'm going to completely rule out that pitch because it's not going to bother me. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just also the, I guess for lack of better word, emotional high that comes from realizing, oh yeah, like we figured out that he's tipping his pitches. Now we know what to do. I just remember from one high school game where we figured out that a guy was not just tipping his pitches, mm-hmm. but also kind of like being very obvious with the signs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just like, okay, like now we know what's coming and how he sets himself up. And sure enough, we teed off on him.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It
shifts momentum in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. And you can just kind of see that patience from Yankees hitters where it's just like, you're going to blink first.
Yep.
And we're going to pounce on that. We'll be ready. That game was Swarmer. I think I watched like the first or second inning, and you could tell like the Yankees were kind of, I think, taken aback by just the way he was pitching because it wasn't hard. He had a funky delivery.
They kind of underestimated his spin rate for sure.
Yeah. But then, you know, I'm looking at that box score now, you know, they get the one in the first and then it's the fourth, fifth and sixth inning is where they just pounce,
yeah.
which coincides to the second and third time through the lineups.
Yeah.
Like, so.
Yay, analytics.
Yeah. No, like it's just, there's no panic in this offense right now. It's.
Yeah. There's very much that sort of like Aaron Hicks said on R2C2, this team's got some fuck you to it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, like we're going to come to play. You're not just going to blink first, but if you beat us, it's going to be because we, like, you gave us your best. Like, we're not giving you any cheapies here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like, okay, if you beat us, tip the cap to you. And
yeah, like here, oh, you're going to throw your best stuff right at us. Okay. Okay. Then we're either going to succeed or fail with it. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and just so everyone's clear, Jose Trevino should be the starting catcher for the rest of the season.
Sorry, Danny.
I looked it up. Wilson Contreras was 1-for-10 in the series.
Was he really?
1-for-10 in the series with a really bad caught stealing last night. Oh, yeah. And he exited early today's game. Like, no reason why yet.
Huh. Interesting. That's a little development.
Jose Trevino, though, walks it off on Friday. Another homer. Three hits on Saturday.
You know, he sits today because his back is a little sore from carrying the team.
Yeah.
But you know what? Yeah. I mean, what a story for Trevino. And yeah, he's my starting guy.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for today on Bleacher Creatures, folks. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at JoshBESNY. You can find Alec at Alec_MonteCavill. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Great. And great, folks. Enjoy the baseball this week, and we will see you soon.